Hello, I'm Andy Davis. I'm from MIT Lincoln Laboratory. I'm here to talk about our experience running a series of capture the flag or CTF competitions for the kind of New England region, targeting students in college, undergrad, graduate students. So what is a CTF? I was a little bit worried about putting this in there, but there is apparently, as we've heard, some debate as to what constitutes a CTF. So when looking at this, we kind of break them down into several categories. There's a Jeopardy style, or we've sometimes started seeing it referred to as an attack only CTF, which is sort of like a seesaw where there's a series of challenges. No one's really defending them aside from the organizers trying to keep them up. There's a ton of other events. So seesaw is mainly targeted at students. There's probably 70 of them on CTF time that are targeted at everyone. There's players versus a red team. So you have a team, you're here, you've given something, you've got to defend it, and some team of professionals are going to come in and try to attack you. CCDC is an example of this. So is CDX, which is one targeted at the military. And then there's players versus players. Ours falls into this category. So does the DEF CON final CTF. And the sort of big takeaway from this is it's a way for someone to practice an offensive skill set in a safe environment. And safe in this case meaning no one's going to go to jail, nothing bad's going to happen. So our CTF, we think it's important. Everyone's got to attack and defend. It's up to teams to decide on whether or not you're going to have a defensive set of people and an offensive set of people, or everyone's going to kind of be mixed together. We think this is more fun. Students rarely get to attack someone who's actually like trying to defend. There's these sort of punching bag approaches where you have Jeopardy style CTF, but very rarely is there like an adversary there. Everyone's on site. We think this is important. Very few CTFs do this. It does limit the number of people who can be there, but there's lots of, you know, trash talking and glaring at people. We cover a wide variety of skill sets. Some of these students who come in just wander in, and some of them think it's going to be an actual capture the flag with like a field and two sets of flags. And some of them are work for defense contractors while in school, finding 0 days and selling them to them. And we do have students who do that. We try to change up our competition every year. Students, we get a lot of repeats, so we can't keep them the same. We also have very few rules compared to many other competitions. Pretty much anything aside from you're not allowed to flood our network. You're not allowed to physically assault another member of a team. You're not allowed to physically assault a member of your own team. We had to add that one. And that's about it. Phishing, completely allowed. A lot of our announcements come from tleak@gmail.com. One of the schools has t1eek@gmail.com. Phishing's completely allowed. Teams have gone to lunch and left a sheet of paper with their passwords on it. Photographing that and taking it with you is completely allowed. We pretty much are in anything goes if you ask us sort of environment. So we've done a lot of these competitions. We've built a framework that allows them to kind of crank out. We started with like an all web-based one in 2011. I came in 2012 and added some binary challenges to this. We found out with the binary challenges, reverse engineering was a big bottleneck. So we had this sort of RE mini CTF that was more educational instead of competitive to get people prepared. We settled in early 2003 that we were going to do our big CTF on Android. So we had a scrimmage because this was a very unique thing. Not a lot of people were experienced with Android, and not a lot of people knew what an Android CTF would feel like. The big event I'm going to talk about was a two-day Android attack defense CTF. And then starting in 2014, we had really honed our sort of framework down and we pumped out a whole bunch of these little mini, more educational, less competitive events. So just to go over this for everyone so they're on the same page, if you played a lot of CTFs, this may be a little bit boring, but a quick overview of how this sort of attack defense CTF functions. So over here on the far right, we have all of the teams, players, they bring their laptops. We have four teams, the blue, green, red, and yellow team. The teams are given a server running some backend services. It's just a virtualized thing. They have complete access to this through a VMware console. They can reinstall the operating system. They can change the operating system. They can do whatever they want to it. And this is the blue, green, red, and yellow servers up top. There was an app store, sort of simulating like the Google Play Store or something like that. It was developed by us and Raytheon BBN, using some technology they developed for DARPA to defend it. Attacking the app store, completely allowed. You could take down the app store and replace everyone's apps. That did happen. We built an anonymizing router. This is to sort of prevent the simple, like, I know what the red team's IP address range is, I'm just going to block it. So we built this sort of anonymizing router and had a pre-anonymization packet capture so we can go back and analyze our results. We had a grading farm of sort of Android emulators. At the lab, we've developed our own Android emulator, and that's what we were running on. And then there's a scoreboard and a grading database. The grading database just kind of keeps the game state. So I'm going to kind of walk through, for those of you who are looking very confused right now, sort of some examples of the red team attacking the green team. So the green team is given an app. It's kind of partially built, simulating like you get dropped in at a place like Google. They submit it to the App Store. That app is downloaded by one of our graders, which is basically just a phone. A flag is generated by our game database and given to the grader. That flag kind of gets inputted in through the use of the app and is sent to the green team server. So now the red team here can generate sort of attack on their own laptops. They could also use their own servers. Send it to the green team server and sort of simulate a breaking into, you know, Google servers and stealing someone's email. And then they submit that to the scoreboard and score points. Alternatively, they can develop a malicious app. They can send that app to the App Store. That app will be downloaded by a user and co-reside on a phone with the same people, the same as the Gmail application. New flag comes in, and it can intercept that flag while on the phone and send it to the red team, who can then submit it for points. I don't go over in this, but you also could attack the App Store and just replace the red team's app with one that just sends it directly to your server instead of theirs. So we tried to make this sort of a realistic scenario. Android apps get reinstalled periodically through a method that sort of emulates updates, so teams could push updates to their phones continuously, but not everyone gets the same app all the time, because probably several of us have out-of-date apps on their phone right now, and that means the general population, lots of outdated apps are out there. Your Android app is going to co-reside with apps that are not necessarily friendly to yours. So just like Google can't ensure that you're not going to download malicious apps, they can't as either. Not every emulator is going to have every app on it, so you don't get any sort of probability. Like, if I know this app is here or this app is here, you have to do some reconnaissance on the actual phone itself. And we think it's a fairly good proxy for how an event's actually going to go. So scoring. This is a much debated, much contested thing. Believe it or not, this formula at one point was a lot more complicated. So we have a relatively, people have mentioned a lot how to weight challenges. So we solved this by not weighting our challenges. Because it's an attack defense CTF, it's very hard to determine, like, how hard is this compared to other challenges. So if people steal flags from it, it's easier to attack and harder to defend. So the way we calculated our score, so for a given team, we sort of sum over all the rounds and all the challenges. And then for each challenge, we have an availability, an integrity, and the number of flags that challenge is currently holding. The availability and integrity are ones and zeros. So if your challenge isn't up and working, you get 0 points for that round. This is because a common strategy, an attack that when given with the attack defend, is just, I'm going to turn off everything and just go attack. So we made sure that if you do that, you get 0 points. You will get absolutely nothing. This is fairly brutal, but was necessary due to the number of people who just got frustrated and tried to turn everything off. Integrity. old flags, there's a window of flags, in which case you have to maintain those flags. And through each application, each challenge has a means to sort of check the integrity of old information. So you have to, you can't just dump all of your flags to like dev null. And then the number of flags. This actually turned out to be an interesting effect. So as the game goes on, you get more and more flags and this pot gets bigger and bigger. So you actually steal the flags. When you steal the flags, if someone's defended successfully a long time, they have a lot of flags in their database. So people who are doing better are worth more points. Interestingly enough, when you steal those flags, they get resubmitted into your application. So now you have more information that you're responsible for the integrity of. So not only do you have to steal the information, you have to keep that stolen information in play and maintain the availability and integrity of that stolen information. This means that if I do a very good job defending my flag and only one person steals from it, but everyone steals from them, everyone has my information. So we thought that was a fairly unique and fairly realistic way of how things actually work. So we had a lot of very good successes with this. Situational awareness. This was a thing we really wanted to focus on. Most organizers, when they have a CTF, sit down and the game starts and they basically have, you know, Unix log files to tell them, is everything up? Is everything working? We wanted to try to solve that. So we had individual accounts, which I know lots of CTFs have group accounts. We had individual accounts, and the way MIT's network's set up, everyone who's on MIT network has a publicly routable, unique IP address. There's no NAT or anything like that anywhere on the network. So we can tie accounts to people's IP addresses to people's names and teams. So we had the ability to watch on our sort of security monitoring, you know, who everyone was, and when someone was breaking one of the rules, I could walk up to their table and be like, Chris, your script is, you know, your script on this port is flooding the network. And then I'd walk away and they'd be like, wait a second, how on earth do you know my name? Because I've never met this person before and this room has got like, you know, 200 plus students in it. Some other interesting thing. We tried to develop with, we're not necessarily the best development team. Most of us are on the systems exploitation. We spend a lot more time reverse engineering code than engineering code. Realistically, any code that we had that was based on a project that was written after 1994 broke horribly. So most of our code was written on Git, Fabric for SSHing around, and crontab. CTF is basically a giant Rube Goldberg machine that people are shooting at. And it turns out that just tried and tested things are a lot easier to deal with. And Panda, which is our Android, well, it's a QMU-based dynamic analysis platform that can support Android. It turned out to be much easier to work with for us, because, I mean, in our defense, we wrote it, than the Android emulator, and allowed us to do this competition on Android. It is open sourced and is on GitHub. If you want to check it out, I do also work on that, so I can answer some questions. So our fails. Last minute network anonymization configuration caused the port numbers to be easily guessable, and one or two teams figured this out. However, when we rebooted that router, it caused them to lose tons of points as their firewalls no longer worked because the randomization kicked back in. Unicode character names. CTF participants will try to do interesting things with any input field you give them. And I thought it would be fine, but I didn't know that Python had terrible Unicode support. So that caused us some headaches. And originally we had this very fancy idea based on our Android emulator and screenshots and OCR, and it worked like 80% of the time. But using sort of built-in frameworks to do this turned out to be a lot more reliable. And we also had, I developed a database extremely, from a very paranoid perspective. This caused everything in the entire game to be logged and some deadlocks to occur. So some questions for the future that we just kind of, our issues are very different than the issues NYU Poly has or any other challenge-based ones. Scale. It's very hard to do an attack defense CTF with more than about 200 people. just because scanning, it becomes an automation task of just automating attacks rather than anything else. Stress, it's a 2-day straight competition, which means that a team can wake up at 4 in the morning when no one's awake and do all the attacks they want. So it's very stressful for the players. It's very stressful for me. I have a I have to stay up for 2 days straight and generally swear off I'm never going to do this ever again for about a month afterwards. Fun. We have a lot of people show up, more than we have room for. We actually have to turn people away. So we think we're doing pretty okay with that, but how to increase that? BBN was very, willing to come and test their new technology. We like this. We think it's a great environment for that. The problem is it can basically only go wrong for them, but they were very brave and willing to step up for that. And we think it helped them a lot. But we're trying to get more people to convince them to like man up and try to see these new development technologies if they work. We're debating on how close we think ours follows reality closely. We're debating on that. And we really at this point have no idea the teaching value of this. We haven't really thought about that. So I guess time for some controversial statements. These are some people playing Capture the Flag, actual Capture the Flag. They look like they're having a blast. According to the right-hand side there, that's what Wikipedia says Capture the Flag is all about. So here's some controversial statements. That's basically a description of an attack defense CTF. If you just take away the sort of, exercise component of it, that's it. We think that's actually the most fun. That's the reason Capture the Flag, isn't a one-sided thing where one side's attacking and one side's defending. We think doing both is actually very valuable. And these are the Wikipedia listed required skills for being good at physical Capture the Flag. And it turns out those are really the required skills for being good at defending and attacking a computer network. So in summary, we had a lot of people work on this. I'd like to kind of acknowledge all of them. Again, it was 40 hours straight, so we had to have lots of volunteers who stayed up all night. So if anyone has any questions or wants to, tell me I'm wrong or anything, you can, I'm willing for it. I'll be here all week, so if anyone doesn't want to ask a question in the microphone, I can do that too.
I was curious how you decided on the duration.
That was as long as I could go without collapsing. was the sole factor there.
So did you think that the length of time was critical? Like, you didn't think this would work at 6 hours or?
It's very hard to do it, right? So these challenges are, a relatively complex Android app, a complex backend. They have no pre-knowledge of it. They're allowed to do things like phishing. They're allowed to do things, like that. It's very hard to do that in less than 24 hours, just the amount of code they have to read.
Hi, I just wanted to provide a little clarification about the CDX. You had it in a special military column, but it's actually students.
Yes, they are military students.
Alan Sherman from UMBC. In our work with high schools, we found that school policy prevented us from doing any sort of offensive activity. Have you encountered that type of restriction?
So the mini CTFs, we've actually taken to different schools. MIT has a network policy that's basically anything goes. They're extremely open with their network. I have gotten some very funny looks from talking with school administrators as to, you want to do what on our network? But we've gotten around a lot of this by hosting a lot of the infrastructure at MIT. So we've told them that they will only be attacking MIT. And then they're generally okay with that.
The type of CTF you're describing is real. You could also do this in a simulated environment. For example, you could take a game like Call of Duty and expand it to allow cyber attack and defense within the game. Do you have any thoughts on the simulation versus the real CTF?
I have no real experience with Call of Duty or developing that. It's mostly I just have experience doing real work, and all of us, none of us have any real simulation experience. All of us, you know, we're the systems exploitation group at Lincoln Lab, so we just kind of wrote what we know. So
I have a question on the duration, because I think that you raised a great point. It's a problem to maintain and run the competition, and you need to be awake a long time, and it's yes. stressful. I mean, the organizers of DEF CON are up pretty much 3 days straight, so it's painful. But do you find that, so were you keeping your competition on at all times? Yes. You were shutting down? Because, for example, at DEF CON, they tried both things. So mm-hmm. there were years in which there were nobody's going to bed. You know, the floor is open all night. What do you think about that?
We tried, we give them access to VMware. So we have the backend services, at least, are run on the sort of VMware vSphere cloud. And we give them each an account on that to be able to pause their VM. So we leave that decision up to them. If they want to go to bed and just ensure no attacks, they can pause their VM. On the assumption that their VM account hasn't been compromised, which did happen, in which case the other team just waits for them to go to bed, unpauses their VM, and then so.
Okay, yes. But then my question is, how many people decided to pause the VM?
Most people stayed up. Most people had at least one. There was a team that measured their success based on human uptime, and. So, and it is correlated. So the teams that are not necessarily teams that do not have as much experience can at least supplement less experience by just having their entire team not sleep for 48 hours.
And I have another question. You described the setup on site, which is awesome. Do you have any evaluation of the in-team mechanics? So can you tell if they're leaders versus followers, being able to observe directly these teams? Because I think that one thing that is completely unstudied and it's very interesting is to see, you know, what is the balance of skills and the division of labor within a certain team.
We do have a little bit of that, because each person had an individual account, so we can determine, like, this person submitted most of their flags, or this person, and we do observe a little bit of that. We haven't done it formally. I will say some of these teams are extremely advanced. So MIT has a SICP club, which is like Student Information Computing Processing Board or something like that, that runs almost all of their on-campus services. So like MIT has their own sort of Amazon-based sort of cloud computing thing, and all of that is student-run, as is most of the infrastructure at MIT. And like I was saying, there's no firewall or anything for any computer at MIT. So that team actually competed. They had never really done CTFs before. And they built their own sandbox, which has now been published, basically just for CTFs, that like automatically wraps the services, monitors all incoming outgoing network traffic, can determine when traffic is crashing services and automatically blacklists packet filtering and stuff like that. So these students actually do not only have these team dynamics that's pretty impressive, but some of them have just, you know, like you three are in charge of tools development for this weekend, and we'll build situational awareness tools, seem to be the most popular, but situational awareness and blacklisting tools or whitelisting tools for some of them.
Thank you. All right, let's thank our speaker.